Wait,
Oh,
okay, so
man.
listen to this joke, though. Listen to this joke, though. I just thought of it only just now,
In the
right?
bathroom?
Okay, so, okay, do you want to hear my joke? I actually didn't think of it in
Yeah.
the bathroom, but as soon as I opened my Zoom window, I was like, I've got it. I've got the best one ever. So I wrote it down really quickly in my notes so I could use it when he gets on.
Do you want to say it?
New
Or
York? New, hold on. Ready? Okay, are you ready? Okay. New York? More like Peter York. Get it? Because we ran into you so much when we were there.
oh my God. That's not like a joke. That's more of just like a thing to say.
I, Peter Vack, hereby request Josh Ovalle for collaboration with the Internet is Dead podcast. Please, Josh, be a guest on the podcast. We miss you.
Should we tell everyone that something really cool might be happening to us, but we don't know if it's
But
confirmed
we
yet?
can't. We can't. We
Can I just
can't.
hint on it? Something
Yeah.
really awesome might be
Let's hint
happening.
on it. Let's
And if
hint
it
at
doesn't
it.
happen, we're probably gonna be sad, but.
Yeah. But also, I feel like even if it doesn't happen the way we think it's gonna happen now, we'll still be happy about how it happens. So try to figure that one out. Ah, I feel so
Guys, the
crazy because I'm like
podcast
a
you know and love
pre-warned to.
actually. Okay.
One second.
You're good.
Are you IG story posting?
I just was.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, that's what he needed the 10
No,
minutes for.
actually, I need to make
No,
myself.
I'm just
I needed to make myself some
kidding.
coffee, but
How many Instagrams do you have?
3 that I really use. I'm still logged into Actor Selectuals, which is sadly sort of dead right now. It's it's glory days are done. It's but I haven't had the heart to sign out of it. And then that's it.
Cool.
But I've been a
Seems
part
like
of
you're good at that.
so many accounts over the years that I've lost access to.
Do you have a
Bowen
favorite?
Selectuals, 420 Selectuals, Canal Selectuals.
Can you make us a selectuals? We needed a
The
selectual.
internet is
Yeah.
Selectuals. Well, Selectuals over its source now. Source replaced Selectuals.
Yeah, like
I
Peter
saw
Vack
that. Yeah. The
Source.
same spirit, the spirit of sort of like pure shit posting, reposting, and like memeing one subject into oblivion. It goes by the name of Source now. And Curtis Everett Pauly, my dear friend, coined Source. I think I won't mention where he got it from, but he was the one that changed Ion Pack Selectual, Ion Pack Source, and then I followed suit,
Is like how I die is hearing
and then
this sentence.
it started a chain reaction, and now you're dead.
Yeah.
It's the origin
Well,
story. It's
okay, though.
important.
I just feel like you can't even say that your friend coined Source because were you even on Twitter in 2014 when they had like the like celebrity update accounts and it would be like Ariana Grande
Oh
Source
yeah. Oh
or
yeah,
Ariana Grande
that is
News?
yeah, that's what it's playing off of. Just like a generic like pop star update account.
Like
Like
tracking where
sort
they
of
are, what
validating, but
hotel.
now accounts that would normally have taken up the Selectuals moniker are opting for Source.
You guys should do like you know how they used to have like celebs hotels and they would tweet addresses of people or they'd be
Yes.
like,
Oh
DM
my
me if you
God.
want the address of Harry Styles hotel. He's staying in New York right now. Like you need one of those Dime Square hotels.
Just to
Okay.
like an address who lives in Dime Square.
Like instead
Yeah.
of hotels, it's addresses, but like still call it
I
hotels.
feel like everyone already probably knows all that though, right? Like,
Yeah, I
or like
guess so.
around like where.
I've had my moments of paranoia. I mean, one thing about being extremely online that I think we all have like our experience with is that there's like this, there's something about being very online that makes you feel kind of paranoid, just like it turns you into a conspiracy theorist, even if you're prone to that kind of thinking. And I remember once I was followed by an account when it was trendy, it still might be, to like do these like Dime Square like gossip accounts. And it was an account that I don't think ever even posted, but it said like, I don't remember exactly what the address was, but it was in the bio. It said like right next to, and then it gave an address. And I read my exact address and I went, oh my fucking God. Like, who behind the account is like out to get me. They're like doxing my address. And I had about an hour of complete paranoia. And then I looked back at it again and it wasn't even my address. Like, I just saw my address. It was like
Yeah.
close to mine. It wasn't even my street, honestly. But it totally, it freaked me out. Do you
That
know what the
reminds me.
address was? No,
Like,
no. And I don't even want to say because like isn't like
yeah.
it really great. Like, they've already found my address just based on like the way the light is like hitting the wall.
That reminds me of what I read recently, the like Gia Tolienta, that person, the person who writes for the New Yorker.
Horrible names. I already botched one of my best names. I was like Curtis Everett. It's Pauly, but I put an R in. I'm dyslexic.
That's fine.
No, I'm
That's
dyslexic. Anyway,
okay
continue.
here.
That person, the one who Gia, who writes for like the New Yorker, she like came out with an article recently that people were tweeting about, and people were all like, because she was like, yeah, I accidentally keep like misreading like certain stuff as like Hamas and like other weird online stuff, and I was just like, okay.
He was
But
reading
that
words,
reminds
like
me of
reading the
that.
word hummus and thought it was Hamas or something.
Yeah, like something like that, or like just like kept misreading different like internet for things in that way, and now you have sunglasses on.
Well,
Yeah,
these are sort of like a mood elevating lens. They're
I
not,
get that.
they're just to like give me a different perspective on things. I think I'll take them on and off throughout the interview if that's okay with you.
Okay, no,
okay,
that's fine.
yeah.
Also,
Oh,
thanks
okay.
for coming on. Yeah, we're excited to
Can you
talk to you.
develop a theory? Develop this theory about why being online makes you into a conspiracy theorist and why it makes you so paranoid, because it is worth talking about. Like, how,
Yeah.
what do you think?
I mean, I think people personally, when I go out and I'm anxious in a place and I like feel like people know me from the internet, it's more of just like processing what it is they might be thinking about me from what they know of me on the internet. I feel like that's to take it on a serious level. I
No,
don't
that's really
know.
good. I mean, we're just sort of theorizing very like casually here. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, even like the thing that happened when people like found your address after you like
Oh,
posted
yeah.
the
No, I actually
article.
got
Oh, that
doxxed
did happen to you?
recently. Yeah, like
Yeah.
that happened. Like
'Cause I'm
that would
like
have like made me so
No, it
afraid to
freaked
like
me out.
do
I like
anything.
reported all the tweets really quickly because I like I
Yeah.
got doxxed on Twitter because I like wrote a How I Killed Liam Payne article. I don't know if you saw that stuff online, but
I'm not actually that much on Twitter. I have like a, I'm not on Twitter really.
it wasn't even a huge Twitter thing. It was more of just like the Liam Payne fandom because like this that whole thing happened. We interviewed like his ex-fiance right before he
Yeah.
died. So they hate us and they doxxed me. So
Which
it
you
was like
could
my
be the
parents' house.
security. Which
Like
is
it
even
was like in
scarier,
Bucks
I feel
County.
like, because
No, I
that's just like your
know.
mom.
It's like, yeah, I know. But don't
Like,
worry, because my mom has a gun. So
okay,
yeah.
really? My friend was my one of my best friends from college was just very sincerely telling me that I should get a gun and my parents should also get guns, because I like of the AI apocalypse. I was like, bro, it's really hard to get a gun in New York, and he was like, unless you're a criminal. And I was like,
Why
But
it's hard to get a
is it
gun in New
hard?
York?
That's based on just a gut feeling. I actually don't know. It is
Oh.
hard. Wait, where are you guys? Where are you again? You're in Philly or something?
We're in
Yeah,
Philly.
we're
I'm
about to move
moving.
though.
Yeah, I'm
Is
moving on
this
Saturday.
podcast, I was thinking about this in the gym. Is this podcast like your way of making friends in New York before you come to New York?
Like literally that
Yeah,
wasn't. Well, we didn't know we were gonna move
it is
here until
now.
after we made it. Well, I'm also not confirmed yet because I'm looking for places, but like low-key, that's what it's turned into.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Don't lie. This is like, it's not some like earnest cultural project. It's really like, okay, so who should we be friends with based on like,
I mean, like,
It started out,
isn't
that's
that
everything
everything?
though. Yeah.
That is.
Like
I know.
everything
I'm not,
online.
this isn't an egg. It's just like, actually, I was
No.
like, that's off. When I
No,
realized
yeah.
why you made this podcast, I was like,
Well,
that's fucking brilliant.
in like actuality, I feel like it's more just like we were like huge. I mean, I was so parasocial growing up. So like
Yeah.
I feel like I would like seeing someone really parasocial talking to the
Yeah.
people who like they're parasocial with. So I feel like that's actually the thing. But now it's like, oh, now we're normal and now we're friends, you
Well, that's
know?
like what it's turned into, I feel like. I
Yeah,
feel like in the beginning it was more so that, and now it's like not as much that.
Yeah.
you have to be really careful with who you become with how you move your parasocial relationships into social relationships, because very often the social is less fulfilling.
Yeah.
It's sort of like going back a little bit to like why being online makes you into a paranoid conspiracy theorist. It's like I think that it's part of it is that it's like a beautiful idea. All these conspiracy theories are actually more interesting than reality, and like the parasocial relationship, like the things you project, your like delusions that you project on the parasocial object are like usually way more interesting than like Taylor Swift. I don't really know her music that well, but like if you were really friends with someone like that, it might be like a lot less fulfilling than your fantasy about what it would be like to be friends with her.
I just feel like it would be
Yeah.
really cool, though. I just feel like it
If
wouldn't be anything less than what I think it would be.
she's
Fulfilling your
listening.
parasocial
delusion.
I
Well, she would
think
be
I'm
like,
very realistic, though.
right, but you know, everybody is so at the end of the day is so human and has so much averageness in them, you know, even you. But when you don't know someone, you're really you're living with your fantasy, and a fantasy can be perfect, and a person can is always going to disappoint.
I mean, I think that's why like fan accounts were so fun back in the day, because it was like living off of that idea. And I also think that that's kind of the same, like along the same reason of like why being on the internet turns you into this conspiracy theorist in a way,
Because now
because
everyone's that, like even not like non-celebrities.
And also there's like the community factor of it, because you like it's like very easy to bond over this insane conspiracy theory with other people online. And then how that translates into real life.
True. And also, I think people are, whether they want to admit it or not, prone to think that the content that they're receiving on their phone is to do with them personally. Even if it's not, you know, like you follow your friend might put out like a very general statement, but because it's not like 20th century media, it's like 21st century social media, and it's all about like in your individual life, I think it primes you to think that what you see is also about your life, even when it isn't. You know, we've all had those. I mean, everyone's had that experience where, like, they see a post and it's like, they're like, oh my God, I can't believe someone said that about me, but it's like actually about you at all.
Well, because I think everything is always being taken in through the lens of like, how does this relate to me? Even like a post of people hanging out, you're like, well, what does this have to do with me? Why, like, in terms of being there or not being there or whatever. And that is like very interesting, because I feel like I've really had to uncondition to like be normal, which is like probably not something you can ever really do fully, but like try to uncondition the like instinct to jump to how like it could be selfish and like really only to me in a situation, and like stepping back from it.
For sure. What one thing, one famous like mass delusion that I think it got like traction in the like real journalistic space is like Thielbucks. Like basically nobody got Thielbucks. Two entities that got Thielbucks. I won't reveal them. But the amount of times I've read in legitimate papers about people, some of them my friends, getting Thielbucks, it's like I don't understand how real journalists could write this. Like it was to me, it's a conspiracy theory on the level of QAnon, but that, yeah, it's not real. Like it didn't happen.
That's
Yeah.
crazy to think about how many other
You'll
things
see
are
like
like
so
that
many
also.
articles referencing like everyone in Times Square. Like it just didn't happen. I often think like I want this money now because the rumors are so out there in a way that I can't get back, according to me too, that I'm like, well, it sucks. I never even benefited from it. Like, yeah.
I was gonna say, I think before we get too into like just like dissecting internet stuff, I'm curious about just like you like giving people a background of like just where you entered into art spaces and like the internet scene and the art scene in New York, and just like what it looked like starting in acting, directing, writing. And I know you've been in like a lot of random bigger films. We were watching Someone Great and you were in it,
And we
and I
didn't
was
know you
like,
were in it, and then
we
we
didn't know
were
you were in it,
like,
and we were like,
yeah.
oh my God. I like
It
had
was
to
a
like
jump
step away from
scare.
the TV.
Wow, amazing.
Because that movie like got huge on like everyone was talking about it online and being like, if you're going through a breakup, this movie will change your life. And then we were like, well, we have to watch it. And then you were in it, and it was like a jump scare.
Maybe you can confirm this, but someone told me that that was Taylor Swift's favorite movie of that year or something. like one of, and that she wrote a song called Someone Great based on the film.
Oh my God.
I don't
I
know.
like just hope that's not
I
true. Like that's crazy.
I hope it's true.
Yeah, I forget your question, but you know, my
Well, just like entering stuff. Where it was
like your
entering stuff for
background
you.
of
Well, I mean,
everything.
I was a child actor and I still am. I
Yeah.
mean, it is my like main profession and my, you know, deepest passion still is my ambition. So my being, it's funny because if you know me from my like internet content creation, it's like shocking that I've had this very like above board acting career, but I more feel like I'm shocked by the fact that I've become this internet content person and this persona online. Like that to me is the more surprising outcome than not an actor on like mainstream television shows. That's what I that was all that still is my dream, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I always am sort of weighing like wondering what my forays into subculture and sort of like edgelordism like have done, like to what extent that even like penetrates that world, I don't even know. Or if it does, like I'm not, I still like it's an open question for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I basically I was kind of, what's the question? How did I get into what?
Literally just
How
like
much
entering
trouble?
like I guess sceney stuff. Like I'm curious how you like
Well,
what were you gonna say, Samira?
no.
Sorry.
Well, I was just gonna ask, like, with you saying how that was like the more surprising outcome for you, like, where in your career do you feel like that shift happened, or do you feel like
Yeah,
it
I
was a
feel like
more
that's a good
gradual
place to
thing?
start.
Well, it was gradual, but I do think it has something to do with, well, I was kind of late to Instagram, I think. I think I joined Instagram in 2015, which maybe I felt like that I felt like I was late to it. And I really believed for some reason when I started Instagram that it was like was for shitposting, even though I don't think I had that language at the time. Like Facebook seemed like a place where your parents were now. And I think like the first pages I got into on Instagram were like cursed image pages. And I was like, oh, cool. This is like Tumblr, even though I was never on Tumblr. I'm just going to use, I never used it like in a basic way. And I was even before I like figured out how to make memes, I was like doing memetic projects where I like once like asked followers of mine to like Photoshop my a selfie and then I posted like 100 or 200 of them. I was like using myself as like a memetic image macro. And then I met someone who was a memer and asked him to teach me how to make memes. And that was in 2018. And then I did the went on the very perilous journey of like going from being a personal account to a meme page. Like I just turned it into a meme page and definitely like worried a lot of people, like my family and like a lot of they were like, what is going on here? Because
Yeah.
what 2018 was, it wasn't like when you think of like meme culture overall, it wasn't that early, but it was early enough that it's still, I think memes like kind of like went mainstream in 2020. So it was still early enough that people were like, what the fuck are you doing, Peter? And then when the pandemic happened, and then that's really that was like so I bring up memes because that was like my first foot into any niche subculture. But that wasn't local and it wasn't IRL at all. It was purely online. But then when the pandemic happened, I became friends with Honor Levy, and I was really, some people don't believe me when I say this, but I was really antisocial before the pandemic. Like I didn't go out at all. I don't even think like I true it sounds silly to say this, but like when people said scene, like I didn't even really know what that meant. Like I was so not plugged into the so to social life. My life was so about being a professional actor, which is a very lonely road. It's like a very isolating road. It's like all about yourself and like it's you against like the whole world of actors every single time. And it's kind of like being a boxer. You just train and you fight, train, fight, train, fight, train, fight. Like there's not like a scene aspect to it. And so when I would hear the word scene, I actually admittedly, I don't think I truly understood what that meant. So then I met Honor Levy and Eugene. I met Honor through my friend Eugene in 2020 and moved to Manhattan with a COVID deal. And it was the first time I was actually interested in parties because it wasn't allowed. It was like I always looked down on people who partied. It just felt like such a just felt like such a loserish thing to do, wasting your time out. But then suddenly it was like, oh, you're not allowed to do this. I was like, oh, so now the like promise of subversion is kind of real because like we're not supposed to be doing this. So that's when I became interested in them, and that is when I realized like, oh, there is like this scene downtown, and I just became a part of it. And I was memeing about it. Like I would meme about Lucienne and I would meme about Dime Square. And it was starting to get liked, like the Drunken Canal, like Claire and Goots from the Drunken Canal liked it. And people that I became friends with liked it. But I was doing that, as many memers do, as like a an outsider, like someone who thought like they would never get in and like even judged what it was. But I think they felt like, oh, cool, like I feel represented by these memes. Like that's so funny. He's making jokes that I understand. So that kind of that was like my entry into the scene, like that era, the Drunken Canal era, you know, and they like published some memes of mine about them in the first iteration of the magazine or paper. And I was like, oh, that's really funny. Like I was doing this as like kind of like a something of almost like a hater. But that's the beauty of memes, is like I really think like the hate of a meme and the love of a meme, like whatever, if you're representing it, it means you like know it's relevant and you have some reverence for it. So that I think was how I kind of got into the scene. And then it's just like, I don't know. Now I've become overwhelmed. And then my film too. When I made RachelOrmont.com, you know, the people that showed up to be in the audience, like a lot of those people then became a part of readings and became a salon theater and just by virtue of the fact that I'd worked with them, I knew them. And then that kind of like roped me into so much more scene activity.
I think what you said about like coming from like an outsider perspective a little bit and a little bit as a hater is funny, because then I just started thinking to myself like, oh my God, like Mike Crumpler's like low key your second iteration.
No,
But
that's
like
what I was
that's also
thinking as
just
you were
when like
talking.
oh really? That's funny.
Yeah, I had it like I could see we both had the same look in
We
our
both had the
eyes. We
spark.
both like, yeah.
Well, yeah, because like Mike Crumplar, he
And
started
we're
running.
low-key the third coming of Mike Crumpler. No.
Yeah, you
Sorry.
guys are the new Mike. This is gonna
Yeah.
you're about to humiliation ritual me. I just
Thank
I
God. there needs to be a girl iteration
And we need
where
a girl humiliation ritual, but the girls are doing it. The girls need to be humiliating.
Well, it's funny that people, when Mike published that piece, people, he was really believed he was doing some very sincere political work, but now he's like as much a part of the scene that he was critiquing as anyone. And it's funny when I encounter people that still believe he was doing journalism, because I'm like, oh no, bro, like you don't understand, like Mike, like I see him out. He's like sort of a friend. Like, yeah. But I think with this scene in particular, the one we're talking about, like, at least then, I don't think it works anymore, actually. But it was a w to like criticize it was a way in. But I don't think that's the case anymore. I don't see that work. Like Mike did it. Others tried. Others may have succeeded, but that is no. The funny thing, one thing I will say is that like when I sometimes see this ambient hate about New York scene stuff based on people thinking that it's very exclusive, but what's so funny is actually not that exclusive. Like you can really show up to any event and like it's pretty welcoming. Like
No, it
it's
has really
funny.
seemed that way. I
Yeah.
mean, literally
Yeah.
just being online and then living in New York, it seems like you're kind of just inserted, like as a
Yeah.
part of it.
Yeah, I think that people are, when people take that attitude of like I hate this, it's a self ex they're self excluding for I think for reasons that usually are like completely made up, like project political stuff onto it that isn't even there. And yeah, it's interesting. I'm now working on getting out of the scene. I need to become like a successful mainstream
Well,
actor.
also it's funny that you said the like that's really how I guess
the surprising part was the meme personality, because I feel like a lot of people like know you as the meme personality and look back on your old movies and are like, I literally can't believe you're acting in this, because it's like a
Damn.
serious, like not in like a
Oh,
bad
fuck.
way.
I fucked up.
Sorry.
We're
I
like
mean, but that's
minimizing the
also
whole acting career right
yeah, we're
now.
like,
Oh,
sorry, what acting
God.
career? We're like,
Okay.
what acting
Okay,
career? But
continue. Sorry.
no, I mean, also that's just like, I feel like my limited perspective, because it's like I know you from online stuff. So then looking at your
Yeah.
movies, I'm like, oh my God. I'm
And
like,
like
oh my
from like
God.
Rachel Ormond and like The Code, and so then
Yeah,
like
like
going
seeing the,
back
those
and like watching your
movies.
older stuff
I'm
like
playing
after
a
that.
very traditional leading man in The Code, by the way.
That's
Yeah, but
true.
you're
well,
with like Dasha and
I am a
like you're in a movie with
traditional leading
Dasha,
man.
Josh Baer, Casey Fry. Like, I don't,
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's I don't think you're alone in feeling this way about my identity being much more linked to like online antics than mainstream acting. And you know, I think that I something about me is that I really do kind of like follow my instincts almost to a fault and sort of say yes to things, maybe almost to a fault. I've really enjoyed the my life doing that, but it is interesting that, you know, this, you know, I have my childhood ambition. It's really, it is the central conflict of my life that, like, my childhood ambition, like, to be this, you know, just totally, you know, acceptable actor has sort of been overshadowed by, like, being a quote unquote sometimes problematic poster. And I'm really excited for the moment when these two paths link up and it all makes sense. But, you know, for the kids listening out there, you know, sometimes when you just follow your heart, it's confusing, even if it's fun and interesting, but not always, it doesn't always make perfect sense.
Well, I mean,
Yeah.
I totally see that happening though, of those things getting bridged, and like, especially
Yes.
because
Just like
I mean, if
generally,
my
I
words
feel
mean
like,
anything,
yeah, with like media in general, I feel like
yeah.
that's the direction we're headed toward.
Especially because, like, doing something unique in media, like, that is really impressive on top of being, like, a mainstream actor. So, I mean, I could see that leading to, like, a really cool, like, then, like, mainstream challenging movie. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I see that being a thing. I saw people joking about, like, I think you reposted on your story. I forget what the role was, but they were like, pick Peter back. And it was like
Oh,
some
for the
movie.
American Psycho?
Yeah, for the
Like
new
the,
American
yeah.
Psycho movie.
Well,
And I'm
yes,
like, oh my God.
I've been trying to meme myself into that job because I think that I'm right for that role, or at least want to stab at an audition.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, yeah, no, I started that basically. Well, my friend Alex Kazemi, the writer, who's a great manifester, suggested that I publicly challenge Patrick Schwarzenegger, and so I am now. So this, so count this as the first stop on my campaign trail to be.
You should
Okay.
try the Joker next, maybe. That
Ooh,
could
I'd
work
be a
for
great
you.
Joker too. Yeah, no, I really would. I could do
You'd just
all.
be great at everything, at all
Yeah,
roles.
yeah. I'm yeah, great at
Freaky
everything.
Friday remake? What about that?
Exactly. What'd you say?
Freaky Friday
Freaky Friday.
remake? Friday remake. Oh, that'd be amazing. Where I am I the Lindsay Lohan part, or am I the Jamie Lee Curtis?
Probably Jamie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because
And
then
then
you
Betsy
can.
could be Lindsay. It's like a current version where they're like gender
Ooh.
inclusive and stuff.
I
Nope. No.
like, I really
No.
like how we're manifesting Hollywood roles for me. That's what I hoped this would be.
Yeah,
Yeah. Well,
sure.
manifestation works is the
It
thing.
does. You don't know what
It's
we've been
crazy.
manifesting and what's on the
Yeah.
tip of our ledge right
It really
now.
does. Can you tell me something you've manifested, or is it still like, is it still too early to talk about?
I
It
think,
might be
okay,
too
well,
early.
I think what if we say it, but we'll just cut it out.
Hell yeah. No, and I was there actually. I was there too when Dasha manifested being an it girl.
Yeah.
You manifested Perfectly Imperfect. I'm manifesting Patrick Bateman and the Joker.
Yes. Yes.
And
Yes.
like, here, look out, here we come.
True.
Amazing.
Okay, guys, we're getting
Perfect.
everything we ever asked for, actually.
Fuck,
Asking it
all
will
our
be
dreams have already
received.
come true.
What'd you say?
I said all of our dreams have already come true.
Yes,
True.
that's actually one of the what's it called? The
Like the
yeah, one
affirmations.
of the affirmations they tell you to
Yeah.
do.
Yeah, you
But
have to act if it's already happened because
yeah.
manifesting isn't about wanting, it's about enjoying the fact of it already existing.
Yeah. Yes.
If you're dwelling on, I want to be perfectly imperfect, then you're manifesting always just being at an arm's length. But if you're like, I am perfectly imperfect, then you get
This
that
like
email from
this is
you.
like I know.
I am perfectly imperfect. I am perfectly imperfect.
I did make the meme of when Tyler made like his app about everyone that being able to post. I made the meme of like Oprah being like Tyler Bainbridge be like, you're perfectly imperfect and you're perfectly imperfect and you're perfectly imperfect and
Oh
you're
my
perfect.
God,
Yeah,
that's
I
good.
got
Well,
some.
if it happens and it becomes public knowledge, then do that meme,
Yes.
but with
Okay, yeah,
us.
it's already there. I will.
Yeah.
You can
Is
include this. I think just leak it now. Like then he'll be forced to do it.
that's
You know what I mean?
true.
Yeah,
What is he gonna
like
do?
you
Turn
don't cut
back?
this out. That's
Well,
real
this
manifesting.
won't go up for like 3 weeks, so I'm sure we'll probably know by then.
Yeah, we'll
So
hear from him
yeah,
about it.
do you think Kanye would like cut that out? No. No, not at
True.
all.
Would Tyler the
Yes.
Creator cut that out?
Tyler cut that out? No. Would Oprah cut that out? No.
No. Would
No.
let me think of someone else. Hold on. Like a woman who's like a white woman so that I can like resonate
So
with
you
it.
can relate.
Would
Yeah.
Miley cut that out?
Would you say?
Miley? I don't
Miley?
know. Miley
Would
Cyrus?
Taylor
Julia
Swift?
Fox?
Julia Fox?
Julia Fox cut she would
Julia
not cut
Fox
that
would
out.
never cut that
Would
out.
not cut that
Okay.
out.
That is what else I'm manifesting, to be best friends with Julia Fox.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
But okay, so also going back to what you were talking about with the scene. I did want to ask because Betsy mentioned when she was talking to us that you guys have like very differing opinions and perspectives on the downtown scene, and I'm curious if you like agree with that and resonate, and if you can talk about that because she like very much was like I just like she's very anti, and I'm
Yeah.
curious how like you guys
Openly anti
being
about the scene on the show.
yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I haven't listened to it. Can you fill me in on what she said so I can like
Well, she was
respond?
just like, oh, the whole thing disgusts me, pretty
Well,
much,
she
but
was
not
like,
really.
if you talk to Peter, he'll have a very different opinion on it. But yeah, I mean, I think like some of the things it sounds like you were in agreement of like not or
Yeah.
like I
You
don't. She
think
was
the
talking about
whole
like.
thing disgusts me? I wonder what she
No, I
meant.
don't think she actually
I don't
said
think she said
that.
that.
But
Yeah.
she was. Well, we were talking about the Mike Crumpler thing, and then,
Yeah.
she was just like, we have very different opinions both on like the scene and on that situation because you're someone who more likes internet drama. At least that's what she was like. That was her perception of
I
it.
mean, first of all, the Crumplar stuff is so old news, and I think
Yeah.
I think that did freak her out more than it did me. I feel like I should have listened to it so I can. What else did she say? I know she doesn't like that. Like,
Well, she was just
I'm
like,
trying to
she
remember. I
found it
mean,
weird that Mike like wrote mean stuff and
yeah.
now he's like in it and stuff like that. And then, I don't know, what else did she say?
I mean, she was also talking about, which it sounds like this was also kind of what you were getting at too, of how, like, she really doesn't ever want like the scene stuff to overshadow the work, like the acting itself, and like Rachel Ramon or like
She
anything.
was
I don't
saying
know
she
if you
doesn't
agree with
personally
that.
feel like affiliated with it, even though
Yeah,
she's
like
kind of
affiliated.
fallen into being affiliated with it
Yeah,
by like
well, you know,
associating with
I
projects.
really do actually agree with her about that. I mean, I think that the troubling thing about being involved in any scene is that there are those who will see that, like, see the forest for the trees more so than the trees. And I think that Betsy, and I really relate to this, like, wants to be a totally above board mainstream actor. And I think, you know, when you, again, you know, it's like, it's so unclear to what extent this even like all of this scene discourse even penetrates like Hollywood. But when you look online and like your proximity to say like somebody like gives you a sort of bad reputation with one tweeter, you know, it can feel really destabilizing and you can feel really like, you know, misunderstood. I think that like what something I think about a lot, and I think I agree with Betsy more than I disagree. I just like, I don't really feel like I'm on opposite ends of any argument with Betsy. I totally see her point. I've just like, you know, I don't know. Like, what do I say? Like, you know, I see her point. I don't like it when I feel like I read some, you know, fit piece on me, like sit, be it on Letterboxd, on Twitter, wherever, and I feel like, wow, this person is this stranger who's never met me and is kind of not even really engaging with my work is making like a very grand conclusions about me and my work. That never feels good. But then conversely, like I have felt very like creatively stimulated and socially stimulated by like writing poetry for readings. That really is like my main scene activity. And I've pulled back from that for very personal reasons that have nothing to do with like being misunderstood, more just because I like need to focus on like trying to write another film. But what I would kind of say to Betsy or like anyone is that like I think it's a great privilege to be misunderstood in a way, because to be misunderstood means you're being perceived. It means that you're putting out work. It means that you are risking like saying things that maybe aren't exactly easy to parse. And that's like the place where I want to be as like a creative person. But I agree with her. It doesn't feel good when your proximity to a group allows for some random stranger to shit on you without like, you know, but I don't think that, but like, hey, like what if you're a nepo baby? You know what I mean? Like there's all there, there's never, what I would maybe say to her is that like she would, I hope that Betsy and myself achieve the dream of like being taken up by the mainstream. But in that context, it's not like we're not going to be immune to that sort of, to that similar, a similar problem. It just will have a different flavor. I just think that being misunderstood and hated without being looked fully into is never something that a creative person can be immune to. You can never escape. So I think I've just, because I feel like more at home with that, I'm like, okay, sure. Like this is the, I'm being accepted right in this scene. I'm interested in my work here, so I'm gonna go for it. I don't, it just hasn't felt natural for me to reject it yet, even though like now I am slightly stepping back. But it's, I think the issue of being misunderstood, I think, just is like a feature of being a creative person, not a bug.
Yeah. No, I really like the like acceptance of that. I think that's like a really powerful, like important thing, 'cause yeah, it does just mean you're like doing important work, I think.
Also, like, you obviously like you can't control what anyone thinks or what associations anyone has. Like, I feel like even anyone in mainstream, like everyone has like certain associations with like every person ever, you know, and has like certain things that they think about them that you just can't, like you said, you can't avoid if you're a creative person.
Yeah, you can't. I think it's really, people want, and you can feel like with certain, I don't, I no one really comes to mind, and I wouldn't want to call them out even if they did. But also, I'm just not interested in people that have this image where it feels like they are trying so hard to be everything to everyone, and they're trying so hard to not ruffle any feathers. It's just boring to me. And so I feel like, what, you know, like maybe that my distaste for that has caused me to run very far in the opposite direction in moments. But we all know those like media figures where it's just like, wow, like you are like, you're just like milquetoast, you're bland, no flavor here. And sure, like maybe you don't like aren't being hated on, but like what do I love? What is there to love? Like, yeah.
Like one other question that I had about like the one other thing that I wanted to know about like the whole scene and that whole community being like a byproduct of COVID. And obviously there's a lot of differing opinions about like whether it still exists or like how it's different now since like it started and everything. But just from like our experience of being in New York and going to readings and literally just hanging around like that part of Chinatown in that neighborhood, like it all still feels really alive, at least to us. And I was curious, like, because obviously, like, I feel like a really hard aspect to ignore is the gentrification aspect of it. And I'm curious, like, how you see it now as someone who's been around since the beginning of it.
Well, it feels like two questions. The first part of the question is that like this idea of like a downtown scene in New York is eternal, and like it might be called, people have called it Dime Square now, but once that name falls completely out of fashion, it will still exist. So
Mm-hmm.
yes, when I talk about like the first iteration that I saw of Dime Square, which I think really was the first iteration with like the Drunken Canal and like the people that lived there now, like not everyone from that group still is around, but the idea of New York, downtown New York, it will never go away. It will always be kept alive in a very energetic way by people that believe in that idea. So that's why it still feels vibrant, and it will never not be vibrant. Really, as long as New York is not like underwater, people will be in downtown making art and creating scenes and doing all the things that artists and scenes do. And I love New York. I'm a native New Yorker, and I love the arts. And so it makes sense for me. And then in terms of gentrification, it's a really hard question because New York is always, just like New York's always shifting, it's always gentrifying. And that is definitely negative. But there are some positives too. I mean, even sometimes when, people get it sucks, but it sort of is like a, it's never not going to be in New York. Like there's never be a moment where gentrification dies in New York. And I always think, like, very personally for me, I'm like, I grew up in the West Village, so I don't really know where they want me to go. Like, I live in the East Village now. Like I sorry, but like I don't see myself as a gentrifier. As long as I live in Manhattan in any neighborhood, to me, in my heart, I'm not a gentrifier. Like technically, I'm sure some academic person would be like, no, Peter, you are a gentrifier. I'm like, well, no, I'm not. Like, I have to stay on West 11th Street where I was born. I mean, like, I don't live that far from there now. Like, I'm not, like, I can't, like, I think. I'm not, I, there's enough things to feel potentially guilty about in this world. Like, that's not one of them. Although when I moved to Bushwick in
Oh, good, you're in a Bushwick era.
2014, I felt very bad about it. And it was like a little bit proto, like woke culture. And so people weren't like obsessed by the idea of being gentrifiers, but I was like, I can't believe all these fucking hipsters like don't realize what Bushwick is. And then they caught on pretty quickly. And then after that, everyone's
I
mind.
mean, I feel like the reason that I asked was because I feel like the area of Philly that we're in is like extremely gentrified and like North Philly and has been because it like Temple, like the college that we went to was like built here and then like now it's just like getting expanded out to like it's just like being insanely gentrified, like Kensington. I don't know if like it just like all of North Philly. And so, and like going into like Chinatown and like just like walking around Chinatown and then there being like Dimes Deli and like walking in there, it was like an interesting thing to see, I think. And
One thing I will say is, Chinatown was always my favorite neighborhood as a kid. And the Chinese, from what I understand, Chinese landlords in Chinatown proper are actually like very good at keeping it for Chinese people. Like, yes, like Two Bridges area became Dimes Square, and that is a phenomenon, but I don't think Chinatown is going to ever become fully gentrified. I really don't.
No,
I
that
think the
makes a lot of
Chinese
sense.
landlords are really actually deeply against it and stick to their principles. And if it was in the cards, it would have already happened. And I am very glad that it won't, because it is my favorite neighborhood in New York, and I do think it should stay for that community. So yes, a pocket of it got gentrified, but I think when people get worried that it's going to change completely, I do not. It would have already happened. I do not share that. I don't.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like something interesting too is just like because it's hard for like young creative people who don't have a ton of money to move to New York, I feel like. So it is interesting because like on one hand they're like and obviously it's horrible that anybody is like getting pushed out, but then it's like wait, but then also people who can't really afford it are coming in and then it's like a chance for them to come. It's like very like interesting. I don't
It's
know.
not a perfect equation at all. I mean, life is really complicated, and yeah.
Yeah, no, I feel like it is a very complicated thing and there isn't a solution. It's kind of just the world also, because the world's just becoming more expensive and more like it's just slowly like everything, I don't know.
Yeah,
It's just like
everything's becoming
it's just
hipster.
spreading out. Yeah.
Your culture is just culture now. I mean,
Yeah.
everyone.
Yeah. I do want to shift to talk about your writing a little bit, because I thought that your reading at KGB that we saw was really good. And I told you this like after you read, but I thought like the way that you read is just really interesting, because it really forces the audience to like ride along with the writer and just follow like every single word. Because like the emotion is just being like expelled out. And I think that like really great writing does that, obviously. And I liked seeing how like your acting personality or identity or whatever you would call it like intermeshed with your writing. I'm really curious just like what your actual process for writing looks like. Because I don't know, like that to me was very special, and I feel like you know something's good when something like happens and you didn't know someone could do that with the craft, you know?
I think you saw what was kind of like my last poem for a bit. Yeah. Was
I
it
think
like,
so. I
back
think so,
to
yeah.
KGB and I kind of got called on it like at the end?
Like it's the surprise guest or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, that my process, huh? Damn. That poem was actually, I usually, with the poems that I've been doing for the past year, I usually write them very specifically for the reading. I follow a template that is canonical meme phrases that I customize for the event to speak about either recent events in my life, things that feel gossipy for the crowd that I'm in, and then I even will be writing it like very much up to the moment to include people in the audience and really so that it is this like totally fitted to the moment. But that poem that you saw was something that was old. I'd written that a while ago and I'd never performed it. But my writing process is different for base, that's the writing process for the poetry. With my novel, that was something that just took years of struggle, and just so much energy, so many drafts. I think it was in a way like an MFA in that like that I a self-administered MFA in that I learned a lot about writing through struggling with it on my own. And then with screenwriting similarly, like I think the way I write is just like throwing a lot at the wall and seeing what sticks. But poetry is a different animal. It does feel more less calculated in a way. Although I think what I read, I did revise a bunch of times when I wrote it years ago. I have trouble talking about process. I never feel like I have
Yeah.
something so beautiful to say about it. Because I'm self-taught, and like and my haters would be the first to point that out. But I'm not an academic. I only went to acting school. I have a BFA in acting. I don't even really see myself as an intellectual. Like I don't really, I'm not attracted to that. Like that's I'm interested in emotion and relationships and in like the visceral quality of work. Like I'm not really interested in ideas. So, I think some writers like alongside their writing practice are like also crafting this way of describing their process because it's satisfying to them as intellectuals. And I've just never, that's not me, and it's not even because I think it will like ruin it. It's not even because I'm trying to be like precious. It's just, it's not part of the fun for me. So I feel like my answer is inadequate. It's because I think I'm also always looking for a new way in. I think almost to a fault. And it's probably to take it back to, why I'm not just an actor and why I'm all these things is that I think I'm one of my favorite things is when I find myself in completely new territory creatively. It's like with the poetry, it was like, wow, or what I mean cr completely new, what I mean too is that I love finding myself somewhere where that makes sense, but that is also surprising. I think actually David Mamet said that about about ending a play, that a great ending to a narrative is totally makes sense but is surprising. And when I read that once, I went, oh, that's so interesting. I love that. So like for me with the meme poetry, that in a way made sense because I'd been making memes for years, but in another way it was totally surprising because I never ever considered myself a poet and I had no ambition to become one. So then once I found myself in that territory, I was like, oh, well, I have my favorite thing. Like I'm doing this thing that is very surprising on one hand, but is also makes a lot of sense on the other. And so I had to do that. So this is very rambling, but that quality is probably the most salient thing I could say about my process, is that I'm often looking for that feeling, you know, something that feels like it is a part of my journey, but is new ground that I was never expect that I was never expecting to stand on.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I don't even think I like am looking for like a like technical professional type of answer, because like I also didn't go to like school for writing, so I like totally like I relate a lot. I feel like it's just interesting, like even just hearing like the struggle and then like what that struggle even like looks like and how you get past the struggle, I guess, is like something that I'm always interested in. But I get what you mean about just like finding it in different ways, because I feel like whenever I try to take a sa like a similar route to something that I know will get me somewhere, it like never works, because I like know what I'm doing. Like I know that I've already like tried to do it, so it like does something psychologically to me where like literally like you have to like surprise yourself by getting to like a different like finding a different means to the ends, I think.
Yeah, totally. No, I yeah. Yeah. Also, I love rap music. I think that like writing poems for me has been like my white boy way of being a rapper. But I will never be a real rapper ever, because I just really like Eminem's the only white rapper I've ever liked. There's no others for me. Like it's not a white guy sport. It just to me is not a
No,
white.
Mac
What
Miller,
about
he's dead. You hate him? You hate
no.
him? He's dead.
What about
He's
who's
dead.
the
Why would you
other?
say that you hate him? He's dead.
I don't
What
hate them.
about who's the other guy that's the white rapper? That's like,
Like back
oh,
whatever.
no, do you know who I'm talking? Oh, I don't
I feel
know.
like I do have one on the tip of me.
The one that dated Megan Fox.
The only white rapper is Eminem. Every other white rapper, he
You're kind of
sucks.
like the writing scene's too Hollis.
I'm
Ooh.
the writing scenes to Hollis. Yeah, you can put that, can be like one of your like front page quotes.
One of the
Okay,
pull
yeah, one of the
quotes.
pull
Pull
quotes.
quote
I
that.
didn't know who to I didn't to Hollis. I only knew just like his picture. And I thought, oh, that's cool. And then I listened to one of his songs. I was like, yeah, he's pretty good.
Cool.
I did also want to
You're back.
ask.
Yes, you are. Pretty good.
I wanted to ask, like, because one of the things that I was thinking about after that reading, and also just generally, I was curious if you get anxious before readings, or if you get nervous, because I feel like before I read, I get really anxious, even though there's no performance aspect to it whatsoever. And so I'm curious if, like, even when you were like just starting out, like going to readings and like going to different events and stuff, if you had anxiety or if you still have it and it shows up in a different way.
Yeah, I definitely have anxiety before reading. But like that is like I think it's like a great privilege to have anxiety. You know, as an actor, we call it stage fright or something. And, you know, I think it's a people sometimes think like, oh, you're a professional actor, it means you're immune to stage fright. But that's not exactly true. I mean, the feeling of anxiety you have before going on stage is like so close to excitement. It is like the fuel that you can convert into energy, and it points towards like your passion. You know what I mean? Like when in-person auditions were a thing, I would be in the waiting room sometimes for like an important callback, say, or maybe even like a third callback, maybe even a fifth callback, and like the feeling is like an American Idol level intensity. And I would think sometimes, as a way to kind of calm myself a little, like, wow, this is such a privilege. Like, thank God I'm not an like if I were an accountant, I wouldn't show up to my job and feel this way. Like, and you know, I'm getting older. Like, I'm old. Like so many men and women, as they get into middle age, like me, like they're not engaging with things that make them nervous. Like that's like Oh my God. So when I feel that feeling, I know that I actually am on like a path that I believe in, because it points towards how much I care, how much I want this to go well. What disturbs me is when I don't feel that way, because then I'm like, where's my passion? You know, if I'm just like, if there's an audition or a performance where I feel nothing beforehand, I actually get concerned, because I'm like, whoa, where's my energy? Where are the stakes? Where's the heart? Where do I not love this? You know? So it's, yeah, the answer is totally. Any performer that says they don't get nervous is lying. And if I weren't nervous, I would be concerned. That would be a problem. Then I would be like, wait, maybe this doesn't matter anymore to me. So yeah. Yeah, and that is what you convert into the energy on stage. Like that gives you something. And yeah, I actually love that feeling. Even though it's uncomfortable, I love it, you know? Yeah.
It is really interesting, like seeing it in yourself as you like when you're in a really anxiety-inducing situation and you watch yourself like be just more energized and then it turn into like just excitement is like a very, very interesting thing, just
Well,
like
it's so
psychologically.
satisfying, isn't it? When you can convert that feeling of fear into the like juice that gives you confidence, it's like that's like the hero's journey. That all these, you know, when they talk about the hero's journey, they always talk about the hero overcoming fear. Like the hero wants to turn away from the journey, but doesn't, you know, like when they talk about courage, those like great voices of throughout time, they don't. Courage does not mean the absence of fear. It's always about acting in the face of fear.
Yeah, I always try really hard when like a voice in my head when I'm anxious tells me to just like not do something. I try really hard to notice it and like do the exact
Like, do it,
opposite.
yeah.
Because I
Do
feel
it
like
that
before
way.
every interview, I'm like, maybe I should cancel it.
No,
And
I have that too.
like, which
Right.
is like so, I think, normal. And it makes me like, it like reassures me at this point because I'm like, oh, okay, no, it's fine. This just happens every time. I'm just gonna think this. And it's just how like your brain works.
Yeah.
Totally. And
No, and I
it,
liked, oh, sorry.
yeah, no, it's no, say.
No, I was just gonna say, I liked the thing you said about like if you were an accountant. And you would never like show up to your job feeling nervous or anxious. And I think that that's really, it's obviously really true, but it's also just like, yeah, nice to hear. Because that is obviously also why so many people don't go after things that they want because they make them feel anxious. When in reality, that's why you should go after those things.
Yeah, 100%. When you feel anxious about something, it's actually like that's the direction you should go in. You know, it's like what you're afraid of and worried about usually is like that should be like an arrow to really like run in that direction. But unfortunately, people too often take that to mean that they shouldn't pursue those things, and they get undone by their anxiety, and that's a shame. That's a shame. Every great story, every great, all these heroes of culture and of the history, like that's what they did. You know, your idols, like it wasn't that they followed that anxiety and conquered it.
Yeah, and it always looks from the outside. Like the outside perception of it, I feel like is always, oh, this person isn't nervous about it because they're doing it. And I feel like it's not until you're actually also doing it, then you're like, no, this person has to be nervous about it because then they wouldn't be human.
Of course, yeah.
That also does just remind me of like the anxiety to start a project even, or just like the blockers, because I feel like that is a different sort of anxiety of like deciding to like go for something that seems really unrealistic, like starting a podcast, making a movie, like writing a book, like that sort of thing. And I am like really curious if that comes up for you in like making movies, writing books, you know, like just everything that you do that you feel is very important to
Yeah.
you.
It's
All of
just.
the every single project is always fraught with doubt. I mean, it's the exact same thing. I mean, you just can't, it's a part of every journey of every project. I mean, like with Rachel Orma, that script was with me for so long. I spent so many years like not believing in it. But I also think that there's like two levels to it. Like your neurotic mind can sort of have a feeling about something, But I think if you get quiet, there's often a voice behind the neurotic mind that really knows. And I would always engage with, I would have so much neurotic, like, because like movie business is so hard. It takes so long to find someone to finance a movie. You have to encounter so many no's, so many no's, and then also so much many years of the absence of no's is even worse because a no means that someone at least read it and considered it. So there's also years of being like, well, no one's even looking at this. It's like just in my core. But with that project, I would engage with this voice behind the neurotic voice that was always like very confident and very sure of it and was like very emotionally connected. And I think I've told this story before, but like in 2021, I dusted it off again and I read it and I just sobbed. Like, and it was a totally non-intellectual reaction. I just cried and I thought, wow, like this. And it wasn't even like, it wasn't like, oh, my script's so good. It was something. It was just like I felt so much of my of emotion in this project still personally for me. And I thought this must mean something. And that was when I started showing it to people again, and that was how it got made.
Whoa, that's
So
so interesting.
yeah.
Wait, so
So
when did you first like write the script? Like what year?
first draft was like in 2014, but it went through
Oh,
so
wow.
many
Okay.
iterations. It went through so many iterations, so much rewriting. And also I like the script is very, very detailed and like scripted, but then on set I like improv a lot with everyone. Like I go very far off script and I was adding stuff. I was like throwing out lines from Twitter, from Instagram, from Substack. I was like reading people's stuff and having them read it. So, and this is always how I always make movies this way, where it's like a real marriage between like very rigorous planning and then like very like psychotic spontaneity, which I don't believe you can even do if you haven't. So you have to approach filmmaking like baking in order to like have fun like a chef and like throw in extra spice. Like it filmmaking is when it to me the way I believe it works well is when it's like a marriage between like military style planning and then like Dionysian play. But you can't get there. Some I see filmmakers that think they can just go to that. You can't just go to that. You have to be so rigorous to get to that point. And
Well, I'm
then it's
imagining
leverage
like
of the things that I like.
like
Yeah.
how many tabs you have to have open in your head while you're doing like that to like keep track of what you already have as an idea of what you're doing and then what like is like popping up as you go. Like that just sounds like a really interesting like experience.
Yeah, it's the, I mean, directing a movie is the most fun you can have as a person, I think. It is the cream of human experience for me. I mean, it's the most, it's like seeing your dream literally come true. Acting is great and it's, I love acting and I want Hollywood to listen to this and realize that, but there is
They're
literally,
listening, I think.
I know they're
Yeah. Hollywood is
especially,
listening. We
I
called out a lot of
know
names. I think they're
they're not,
listening.
they're truly listening, but there is nothing like directing a film. It is very special, very rare
Wait, can you
special.
put your sunglasses back on?
Yeah, sure, I can put them back on.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, it
Back
feels
on.
right.
Yeah, it
Okay,
feels right
perfect.
now.
So, with Rachel Ormont specifically, do you think that it was important that the movie like intersected with people who are already like have this like insane attachment to their identities like in the real internet world? Like I'm curious how that like how you think about that, because I know that was also the case with The Code, of like you and Dasha being like the main characters and like Casey Fry appearing, Joshua Valle being in the damn Zoom call. I was like, I think it's interesting for people who watched like the internet not really be portrayed, because this is my experience of like watching, being a kid, loving the internet, thinking it's like the most magical thing in the world, and then it like not really being portrayed in any movie in a way that like made me excited or made me think like, wow, this is actually accurate to my experience. So I'm just like, yeah, that I just said a lot, but I'm curious what your perspective of that is.
I mean, yeah, it was important to me. I mean, when I started writing the script years ago, I was like not online. I was like looking at the online world as like from an outsider's perspective, reading about it. And then, of course, as we've been over, my like journey as like a content creator like put me very much in this chronically online world. So then when, and again, like for all the for the millions of listeners out there, that the journey with this film is such a like allegory for me that like even though it took me much longer than I wanted, like it had to take that long. Because I don't, if I'd made the movie before I became an online person myself, it wouldn't be what it is now. And I'm thrilled with what it is now. So, but to answer your question, like, yeah, when I was casting the movie, it like just felt so natural to try to get as many true online personalities in there. So, because those are the people that were gonna, because I true, like I said just a second ago, like I truly believe when I'm making a film that like you need to have people there that can generate things that are so of them. It's like you create the sandbox for people to play in, but then you want the like most playful kids in the world, and for this it had to be these online people. And like like I didn't write that role for Dasha, even though people think I did. But when the movie was getting made and Dasha was a friend, it just felt so natural that she'd be that role. It was, I think like it's interesting that years ago I like was fantasizing about people like Dasha one day existing, but then they started to exist and I knew them.
That's
So
really
it
cool.
just worked,
Yeah.
and then when we were, trying to get people into that audience, that we did a lot of work to get as many people that had these personas online in the room as possible so that they could, so that I could just say, hey, Riff, like talk about the things you talk about online. Like, because, to talk about Selectuals for a second, I've done a lot of, when I was very involved in the Selectual world, what I loved about those pages was I found it so interesting to see what a page would do when it had multiple admins, like the way a page felt when four or five different really interesting voices were collaborating to meme a singular topic. I found that so fascinating. And it was something I really wanted to mirror in Rachel Ormont that was very challenging because, so often a filmmaker wants like a real unity of a voice. And I was like, wanted it to feel cohesive, but I also really wanted there to be like a multiplicity of voices in there. So that we aimed for that in so many ways. One of them was like, getting as many interesting people in the room as possible. And then it was like, two people made the music and the sound design was like three different people. And then my friend Nate Wilson, we memed it with multiple fonts. Like the post was also about like adding like layers and layers of voices to just try to somehow mirror that, like, because online it's like it's not, there's no continuity of voice. Your feed is just like a cacophony of different voices, but it's fun because it's like something you sort of curated. It's like you curated that mess. So we did our best to try to curate a mess that made sense for this world. And I think we got pretty close.
I'm curious, like when you were writing the movie and making it, what you hoped and like what you still hope people take away from it. Because so Brittany's mom watched it.
Oh yeah, what's your
Sorry, I gave my mom the link.
yeah.
Don't kill me.
No, I'm not, no, that's
But
cool. Cool.
and she like thought it was really sad when she watched it, and that I thought was interesting because I feel like I thought your mom would think it was really funny and laugh a lot during it.
Well, she also
And
did. She was like, "This is like cracked," but like,
yeah,
yeah.
and because I
What's
feel
your
like when
mom? What?
I,
No, continue, continue.
oh no, I was just gonna say like when I watched it, I thought it was really sad the first watch, and then the second watch, I was like laughing more and like thought it was more funny. But yeah, I'm just like people's interpretations of it are really fascinating.
I have heard this, that the movie feels sad on the first watch and then maybe funnier on the second watch.
See, I had both at the same time on my first watch. I was laughing, but then at the end, I was like, damn, they like the part where she's on the subway, I was
That
like,
was, yeah.
this is really sad because this is literally people you see on the subway, and like just giving it that backstory, like to me, resonated a lot.
But you were laughing so much
I
during
was
like the
laughing.
first, like, because we
Yeah.
were like
But also, I was with
sitting.
my ex-boyfriend, and he was
Yeah.
just making faces at me the whole time, being like, what the fuck? Because he's not online. So him watching that movie was just like
Well, what
really
did he think?
funny.
What did a not online person think?
He was just like, I didn't like
Yeah.
that. But I don't think he really, I don't know. He like he did
But then we
actually
were.
write on his secret Substack. He
Yeah.
had a secret Substack where he wrote about me. And then he was like just saying, he was like shitting on Dime Square and being like, all these people getting there, this is fake, like saying like people I know how it works. Like you get a bunch of people and then you're like, oh, it's sold out, and then people are gonna all like grumble over the tickets and like, and I was like, oh my God, someone's
It was a
projecting our
lot. No,
breakup
he's
onto
not
Dime
getting.
Square.
He's getting. You're giving him away. He's not at all not online. If you know what the words dime square mean, you are online.
Well, he knows what
I
it
think
means,
he
I
knew it
think,
from
from,
her.
and also
Yeah.
another girl he works with,
Yeah.
which is
Those
like,
are the biggest haters. The people that know what dime square is but don't wish they didn't are the biggest haters. When you're
yeah.
like the really offline people that I have interacted with who see the movie, they have a much purer take on the movie.
Yeah.
You
That's what
know,
Eugene was saying when we were talking to him about it.
about what? About Rachel or
About
about
Rachel,
Rachel?
yeah.
Like he was
Yeah.
saying that he went to a screening in Australia and people who were very offline like loved it and thought it was, yeah.
Yes, I know it. And that's so, it's so interesting because the hate that we get is from people like your ex who claim to be
He's the
offline but are
problem.
actually
Yeah,
so
Dom.
plugged in. But like, you know, my a friend of mine, Emma James, shout out film Emma James, great girl. Her she brought her mom to the screening we had in Florida, you know, and her mom was like, I found that movie so interesting, sad. An actor in the movie who's not at all online came with his brother, and he was like, they talked about it for hours after. You
Yeah.
know, when people, it's invariably the haters are ones that wish they didn't know the reference. Because
Yeah.
you
Which is
know
really
what the reference
funny.
is, it is, you know, it's that experience which we've all had of like stumbling on a corner of the internet where you are seeing a subculture that is actually totally opaque to you or
Yeah.
impenetrable to you. And that's what we were going for. I mean, the fact of not even putting all these Dime Square references and Dasha, like, you know, Dasha adjacent reference, just my attempt to try to be honest about what I was seeing online. You know, people that hate the movie are like, you're just trying to create some sort of in crowd. It's like, not really. I'm just actually trying to be like honest about the way it feels to encounter a niche subculture online. Like, and you're telling on yourself to hate on it so much, you know, but that's interesting. Yeah. No, also I understand the movie's not for everyone. Like I really like extreme cinema and like extreme anything that has it that deals with extremes is going to be polarizing. And so it shouldn't be liked by everyone. It would be
Yeah.
ridiculous for me to
Yeah.
think that it should be. But in terms of like what I want people to get out of it, like I really like, you know, everyone always says this, but it's actually true. I don't have an agenda like for what you should get out of it. If you know, sometimes I find my experience with the movie is just so unique to me as the guy who made it. I could never, I don't even feel
Can you
like,
take the sunglasses off now?
okay, yes.
Okay,
I
thanks.
like being directed like that. I
Yeah,
can't
sure.
really, yeah, I can't speak to that.
Yeah.
I just feel so thrilled when people have a reaction that feels strong. That to me makes me feel like we made the right dish.
Yeah. I'm curious how you think this movie is going to age in a few years. Because
I believe it will age very well. You
yeah.
know, detractors are insistent upon the fact that it won't, but that is one thing I know in my heart of hearts that it will age well, for a couple of reasons. I mean, it's a very universal. Beth, the story of Rachel is like very classic. It's not really so offbeat. And I think that in the future, people will understand even more what we were going for. And when all of the like dime square haters like are dead or like have dementia, it will be.
Not my ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, sorry, not your ex.
No, he'll be the one
No!
survivor.
It will.
I'll mouth-to-mouth resuscitate him with with my
With your
dime
baby
square
voice.
mouth. Oh,
Yeah, with your
with my
baby.
baby voice. And
Yeah.
then he'll be cured because it'll like be infect him.
Yeah, I mean,
Okay,
listen, we
sorry.
can never know how things would age. So me saying this is partially manifesting, but I just, for reasons I can't really even articulate, I'm just very confident the movie will age well. I mean, I like seeing movies that I feel like are time capsules, and
Yeah,
is one
yeah.
of them. And even if all of the, I mean, like Shakespeare's comedies still exist, and so much of the humor like isn't parsable these like now. I just think like, it's only in the moment of a movie's release that, yeah, all the things that people think are going to be so like discordant in the future, I just don't think they will be. I just believe in it. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah.
You can disagree.
No, I
No,
agree with
well,
you.
I was gonna say, like, even our other friend who came to the screening with us, she like didn't love the movie, but she was even like, but it is like a time capsule. And I feel like that
Yeah.
is a really important point of like how it'll age, because I feel like it being a timepiece is really fundamental to
Yeah.
that.
I think
Yeah.
that aspect of it, and just that it's like genuinely a very, very interesting like
It's like
concept.
creative and
It's
new.
really creative. I think people will like detach from the idea of the scene, and then it'll be more. That's also kind of what
Yeah.
Eugene was saying too, and I really
Yeah.
agreed with him. He was like, Peter made a midnight movie, which I do
And
think is
also,
so special and magical.
yeah, like the writing was really good. Betsy's acting was crazy
Oh
in
my
it.
gosh,
Like it was
she's phenomenal.
insane.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And I feel
Thanks.
like just those things in itself make it, will make it age well.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. And you know, Eugene's aiming for this too, and it's why I admire him so much. We just
Yeah.
have so few films that are really attempting to speak to the moment that we live in.
Yeah.
I,
Yeah.
you know, I think many classic works do that. But we're in a moment where filmmakers are really scared of doing that for a variety of reasons. I think partially because it's technically very hard to figure out how to make this life that we live that's so focused on screens seem cinematic. It's a big technical challenge. So I think filmmakers are just like, well, fuck it. I'm just gonna make a movie that seems like it took place in the 80s or the 90s, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's a difficult thing to tackle, especially because
It's
it's just
like
so
technically a problem.
polarizing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and the issues of right now are not to, I think just technically, like Eugene's movies are such a great example that like it's just very hard to make that seem cinematic or fun. And then not to mention the issues of today are so polarizing and people don't want to wade into those waters.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no, I thought he did a really good job. Like I saw what's interesting about my perception of Eugene is like I knew about him before I even knew like anyone was connected or anything like that, 'cause I like we both loved Josh Ovaya when we were younger, and he's like
Yeah.
the
Josh Obama's like a, is he a TikToker?
he was in
No.
he
He
was
was
in
like
Spree, and he was
in,
also in The
yeah.
Code on
Yeah,
the
but who is he
yeah.
exactly? He's like a
He's a
comedian.
YouTube
He was a
guy.
Viner, like he got big on Vine back in the day.
And
Yeah.
he was like he's like around our age, and I think it's interesting because I literally like knew about Eugene like way back then, like 2016 or something like that, like maybe before that, I don't know, I forget when it came out, but like even just like I saw the marketing for Spree as soon as it like came out, and like now seeing Eugene making The Code with like all of you guys is like a very interesting thing, because I'm like, whoa, like I didn't like all of this just like formed in front of me, and like I think that he like the evolution from Spree to The Code, I think amazing. Like I honestly, Yeah.
like when I first watched Spree, I was like, this doesn't totally resonate as an internet movie, but I like that he's even trying. With The Code,
Yeah.
I was like, okay, yeah. Yeah, he
Yeah.
did it.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, I'm very happy with the code. I
yeah.
love Eugene is in a league of his own in a way, and it's too bad because it's just like I do think younger filmmakers are gonna follow in his footsteps more, but like in terms of like old ass millennials like us, it's just like you know, I don't want to name names, but so many people of our age group of like they're literally making movies as if they are like boomers. Like they're
Yeah.
so many ancient millennial filmmakers are just completely checked out of what is
Yeah.
the real world, and they're and you see it. They're just making movies that you know that could have easily been that they just feel like they were made in 1991, and
Yeah.
that's it. And I just don't
Yeah.
get. I don't understand why you want to just completely divorce yourself from the reality of your moment as an artist. It doesn't make sense to me. So I think that, you know, Eugene is so, his mission is so to be like talking to the moment. And it's just like, thank God. Thank God.
Yeah. No, because
No,
we
I think.
need people like that. Because otherwise, there's not going to be any art that captures this moment.
And no, and that's not good. Because that,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
that's, I think, part of why people feel so like, well, I mean, we have that art, I think, online, like in terms of content posting. But you know, I think we need it in movies, and we need it in the boomer mediums too. We need it everywhere. It's kind of how it's how we survive this life. You
It'll
know?
be interesting when, like, things turn over, and then internet movies, or just like movies that
do have to do with the internet and like aren't acting as if they're from before it was there, like become what's normal. Because I think that will eventually come to be, and I'm just curious like what that's gonna look like. Because I feel like for people who like who have been on it and been like waiting for that, it'll just be funny.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it'd be great. Yeah.
Well, even with what you were saying about like the world today being how it is and people just not wanting to make movies to even tap into that, it's like, okay, but why wouldn't you want to do that? Because that's like what making a movie is for, and what like making art is for, is to like help just like make everything feel not so bad, you know?
And like explain
Yeah.
it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's challenging with film because, you know, with if you're a poster, you can, that's, you have all of the agency, you know, you can just make your content and put it on your channel, your feed, and if you have a following, people will see it. But things like cinema is really dependent on like this huge investment from somebody else, and
Yeah.
so all of these different like codes come into play, and a lot of fear comes up, and like the film festival circuit is, I will say, it's the most risk adverse it's ever been. You know, it used to be that movies that played, look, I mean, maybe I'll get in trouble for saying this, but that played at Sundance and South By were things that were then talked about. But like, can you name me a movie that played at Sundance or South By? But
Yeah.
that's not how it should be.
Yeah.
But that is, I believe, because the programmers at these festivals are so anxious about negative PR that they're not
Yeah.
programming things that speak to the moment, because those are the things that are going to potentially draw some, and negative PR is so amorphous now. It's like some tweets on, they don't even want a couple tweets, you know, and I think that is so bad for art when people in these institutional roles are scared of a couple tweets.
Yeah.
It really signals it signals a real death of something that we can't let die.
Yeah.
And it's why movies like The Code or My Movie like didn't play a lot of festivals, like, but yet people seem to be engaging with them, you know?
Yeah. It is
So
interesting of
yeah.
those institutions too, just like the that used to be really the route for like doing that, and now it's like you really have to figure it out yourself.
Yeah, you know, you do if you want to make a certain kind of film, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, it's not like, look, I don't want to speak in such grand. There are definitely festival movies that are okay, but I am speaking to something that is true. I mean, I Tiny Furniture was one South By. I mean, I just when I talk to people that are just like movie going people, I'm not really hearing about festival movies anymore in the way that I used to. And I do think it's because programmers have become totally risk adverse and are
Yeah.
programming things that just they're certain will not get them in any sort of trouble. And I on some level get it, because they're really worried about losing their jobs. You know, they're not. It's easy, you know, when if you're a totally independent filmmaker, you know, you only have your muses to speak to or whatever, you know, and like, or, you know, sure, people might criticize you, but that's like easier to handle when you're the artist. But if you're working for an institution, you know, you don't want somebody on the board to be like, look, why'd you program this movie that a bunch of people online are saying is such and such? Like, you're fired. But somehow we have to disentangle ourselves from that, like those mechanisms, because it's terrible for art.
As a final question, do you have an idea for a solution to that? Like, what do you see fixing that?
You know, my only thought is that we have to just realize we're in a new world where we'll never be able to avoid there being negative, like some negativity out there. You know, like, because yeah, before the internet, you know, if you were, I don't know, like, there would be people hating on you, but the only people that you heard from were like the critics that worked at newspapers. And it was like, okay,
Yeah.
so you got some good reviews, some bad reviews, but now you're subject to like schizophrenic people online. Or like, you know, it's just, I think people just have to, it's a new reality that I understand why people aren't comfortable with yet. But I think in the future, hopefully, it's like, yeah, like people just are more, have a thicker skin. They're like, it's
Yeah.
obvious that there are going to be people out there saying outland, making outlandish claims about things and outlandish claims about people. And that won't have so much weight. That won't have so much influence. Or, because it's actually like it's one of those things that is not actually powerful. It's only powerful if you let it be powerful.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
People just have to get used to a new reality where
Yeah.
nothing's.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of like also feel that about just like the pathways for making art now,
Yeah.
too. It's like very similar, I think, of just like accepting that the world has just changed in terms of like also like at the same time as that, then kind of being like, okay, well then you actually have to find a different way to get things done. And it's just like an interesting like play box, I guess, to be in.
That we think are powerful will just like cease to exist, and like there will just be completely new outlets for things that follow totally different rules. Or I just do think people's perspectives on things will change.
Yeah, for
You know,
sure.
yeah. Thanks for coming
Thanks for
on.
coming on.
Can you put your
This is so
sunglasses
fun.
back on for the
Yeah, I was
outro?
literally gonna say the same
Oh my
thing. I
God.
was gonna be like, wait,
That's
one more
the
sunglasses?
outro.
Okay, so we have an outro that everyone does.
Yeah.
Is it?
So, you wanna send a chat? Should I send a
Yeah,
chat?
I can send it. Let me pull it
So, we have
up.
everyone do this. We're trying to get Josh on, Josh Ovaie, as we
Okay.
actually mentioned before. And you've actually acted in a movie with him.
With, yes.
Oh, yeah,
This
but we're
was the
not, though.
original
I
intention
know.
of the
I didn't think you were a
podcast.
friend.
Wow. Not
But
enemies, like, not friends. Okay.
yeah, if you just want to read that out loud. Yeah.
I, Peter Vack, hereby request Josh Ovaie for collaboration with the Internet is Dead podcast. Please, Josh, be a guest on the podcast. We miss you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You could add like a Joker spin. What if you added a Joker spin?
Ooh.
Joker spin on this.
Yes, yeah.
I, Peter Vack, hereby request.
Ew. Ew.
Hey, what?
Yuck.
I can't. I can't.
Okay.
I
No,
can't
I won't
become.
laugh this time if you do it again.
No, you're saving it for the audition for
No,
Hollywood.
yeah, I'm not even sure. I can't improve on this, really.
Okay. It's fine.
Like, yeah, I can't. I can't improve on it.
That's
Okay.
okay. That's okay.
It's
Thanks for
okay.
coming on.
Yeah, this was fun. Thanks
Yeah, this was
for
really fun. Said a lot of great
chatting with
things.
us.
Maybe when you live in New York, we'll be friends, because I know that's your real. I know that's
Yeah,
the real.
that's why we had
Yeah.
you on here.
Thanks for
Like,
outing
not
us
even a
about that.
reason, just so that like you have a reason to like say hi to me at KGB or whatever.
True.
Yeah.
Or Dime's Deli.
Or Dimes Deli,
Yeah,
yeah.
or that random bakery. Oh
Oh
my
yeah.
God. Dime's Deli.
Oh,
Dude, I can't believe I
although.
missed
Wait, oh
that.
my God, I have to tell.
Yeah, wait, yeah, can you say?
We after you like walked out and then like we were gonna walk out, we were also walking out and we said bye to the like the barista, like the person, the cash barista person, you know? And she was like, wait, is that guy someone you know, or is that like someone I'm supposed to know? And then we were like, oh, it's like his Peter Vack, he's like a director and like an actor and he like lives like in New York. And then she was like, I see him come in here all the time. And she was like, I can never tell when people like working in this neighborhood, if people are famous or if they're just hot. And we were like,
Ah,
right.
that's amazing. I like that you were like, well, we know him and you're supposed to know him. It's both.
Yeah. It
Dude,
was
I
a
feel like you
crazy
don't leave that like
conversation.
2 block radius. Like I feel like we saw you like 50 times in that 2 block radius
I
somehow.
really
Fair, we
don't.
also didn't leave the 2 block
Yeah, to
radius
be
in that
fair. At
weekend.
least in the AM hours,
That's
we didn't.
really the New Yorker in me though, because like that's how we grew up, just like going to the same places all the time.
Yeah.
It's like a small town. Your neighborhood is like becomes your little town. And well, can't wait to see you in Dime Square soon.
Perfect. Great.
Perfect.
That's where I'm gonna die, I think.
That's where you're going to be reborn.
Ooh.
Yes.
Thinking about after we like saw the Q&A at Rachel Ormont and he like talked and then I was like and then you were like we need him on the podcast and I was like if he comes on the podcast I'm not saying a word to him.